Who would you say is the United States' closest international ally? You could make a case for Britain or Canada, but many Australians would argue that it's their country that's America's closest partner. This summer marked the 100th anniversary of the first time Americans and Australians went to war together. Australia's ambassador to the United States was in Honolulu this week to commemorate the occasion and celebrate the U.S.-Australia relationship. HPR's Ryan Finnerty was at the ceremony and tells us the story of how that relationship began.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Guys, it's been called the first modern battle. In the summer of 1918, Allied forces from Australia, Britain, and the United States attacked German positions around the town of Le Hamel in northern France. What you just heard was a recreation of that battle produced for the television miniseries Anzacs on Australia's Network 9. The Battle of Hamel marked the first time that tanks, infantry, artillery, and even aircraft were all used in perfectly coordinated unison, a revolutionary concept now known as combined arms. Hamel was also the first time that American and Australian troops ever fought together on the battlefield. Joe Hockey is the Australian ambassador to the United States, and I spoke with him while he was in Hawaii this week to celebrate what Australians call mateship.
Well, mateship is like being a buddy, but it's on steroids. So it is where you do anything for your buddy, and you're honest with each other. You support each other through thick and thin. You're not afraid to give each other a bit of a tickle up from time to time, but when push comes to shove, you'll die for your brother or your sister.
And the Battle of Hamel was 100 years ago this summer and started a long and deep relationship between the United States and Australia. What do you think was the significance of that relationship over those past 100 years?
Well, we're the only country on Earth to have fought side by side with the United States in every single major conflict. In World War One, you stepped in and it really turned the war. And ended what was meant to be the war to end all wars. And then in World War II, America made sacrifices on a grand scale, particularly here in the Pacific. More than 100,000 Americans are buried in the sand between Australia and Japan, which is an intergenerational debt. In Korea, we're side by side with you. In Vietnam, we're side by side with you. And as we have been in Iraq and Afghanistan and even more recently in Syria, wherever it is around the world, we stand for shared values and we'll continue to do so.
And where do you see that relationship going for the next 100 years, maybe?
Well, it'll continue to be strong because it's based on really sound values. And, you know, both our countries believe in freedom and democracy and enterprise and opportunity. Both of our countries believe in freedom of religion, freedom of speech. And these are values that are going to be sorely tested once again, sometime in the future. And that's inevitably going to mean that we're going to have to make sacrifices. But having loyal mates, loyal buddies in the Pacific and on both sides of the Pacific matters to both of us.
And you came out to Hawaii, which is the headquarters of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command. That's an increasingly important and dynamic region of the world, and it's become the focus of the U.S.-Australia relationship. What role do you see both the United States and Australia playing in the Indo-Pacific over the coming years?
Well, it's a leadership role, and it's leadership not only based on military strength and economic strength. It's leadership that's based on support for strong values. And it's those values that are the aspiration of hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people in the Indo-Pacific region. This is the fastest growing region, not only in the world, but in the history of humanity. And people want to sign up to our values. They willingly want us to be proactive, particularly the United States. Whether the United States likes it or not, it is the leader of the free world and it is a values leader in the Indo-Pacific region. So we're going to have to fight for those values. But what we know is so many people across the region in so many different countries want to be a part of those values as well.
Australia has a very close relationship with many countries throughout the Pacific. What does your government hear from those countries about the United States? What does the Indo-Pacific region want from the United States?
It wants the United States to continue to provide economic, military, and moral leadership for the region. The American exceptionalism is alive and well. I mean, it was, you know, arguably it started with the passage of the Great White Fleet at the beginning of the 20th century, when Teddy Roosevelt ordered his ships, the American fleet, to go around the world to say, hey, the United States is now on the world stage. And ever since, the United States has had a deep and abiding interest in the Indo-Pacific region. But most importantly, the Indo-Pacific region wants the United States engaged. And I know that there is a tendency from some to look away from the Indo-Pacific, but America can't. I mean, it has no choice. The irony is I just flew from Washington, and as I was flying across from Washington to Honolulu, which took about 14 hours, including a stopover, I reflected on the fact that I could have flown from Washington to London and back in the same time. And that's why we have to keep reminding Washington, we have to keep reminding all Americans, as we do Australians, that this is the region that is going to drive the future of our children. It's just, it is. It's economically, socially, and you know, perhaps even from a military perspective, going to be the biggest play over the next 100 years.
There are a lot of voices in the United States calling for America to pull back from its leadership role in the world, to be less responsible for funding the security of the world or in many of the world institutions. What do you see as the dangers of that course?
Well, you know, every time you have a change of season and you approach summer, the first flower to bloom is the United States because of its values, right? It is the most significant player, and you can't change the tide of history unless you willingly want to have a lesser quality of life. And the United States has been strong because the United States has been a leader, has been the leader. Leader on values, the leader on the economy, the leader on innovation. So if the United States chooses not to lead, it's going to give up, you know, a certain amount of prosperity that it has. It's just the way it is. Either you accept your destiny and have a hand in it, or you walk away and accept that you're going to have a lesser quality of life, which would be the what would happen to the everyday American. That have a lesser quality of life if America wasn't prepared to lead the world.
We've seen some significant developments in the peace process on the Korean Peninsula in the last year. An American aircraft carrier ported in Vietnam for the first time since the end of the Vietnam War. What do you view as the trajectory of the Indo-Pacific region? Is it moving towards a more peaceful, stable end, or a more conflicted one?
Well, as you see increasing prosperity, and as you see, you know, countries emerge from the darkness of poverty and mediocrity, there is going to be more and more competition. It's actually the fact that historically the region has been comparatively peaceful, certainly when you compare it to Europe, but it doesn't mean that we can take peace for granted. And, you know, by the middle of this century, more than half the world's submarines are going to be in the Indo-Pacific region. By the middle of this century, four of the six biggest economies in the world will be in this region. And inevitably, by the middle of this century, tensions will be higher in this region unless we all work really hard to manage those relationships. And the US-China relationship is absolutely crucial. Absolutely. The world's big enough for both countries to have a role to play. But You know, we can't default back to the days of aggressive imperialism and hope that we'll end up with a peaceful outcome.
All right, Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
That was the Australian Ambassador to the United States, Joe Hockey, talking with Hawaii Public Radio's Ryan Finnerty. Ambassador Hockey was in Hawaii to mark the 100th anniversary of the World War I battle, in which Americans and Australians fought as allies for the first time.